Chapter 9. Tortanga. Lavender moonlight from the larger of Nam's two moons shimmered down through the fan-like leaves of the swamp trees. Most of the travelers had arrived at the meeting place, but Makwa and Sir Ruth were late because of the time required to program his new necklace. Tuljapa waited beside a raised fire basin on what seemed to be a large flat rock. The strange man scratched a mark on a big piece of dry bark with a chunk of coal after collecting payment from each passenger. Nearby, in a large tent set upon the level surface, sat Shimna. Her eyes were glued to the gathering travelers with an intensity that spoke of using all of her might to remain still. When she spotted Makwa, she reached around behind her and grabbed a familiar hat. She shoved it over her head, ran out of the tent, and pounced on him with a hug.
Makwa, aya kut de setu, kalili turf tu nif desesin akwisin maya dispeka kut de setu.
Makwa blinked for a moment, hugged back, and as he did, the most amazing thing happened. They came slow at first, but then he heard her words in his mind.
Makwa, oh, good to see you. Even if you do not understand what I'm saying, good to see you.
He let go and stepped back with wide eyes. Saruth burst into laughter.
It functions as intended, I assume.
Makwa nodded to Saruth.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's a ack.
Shimna, who had just poked him in the nose, was now making a face.
Akwisin?
A moment later in his mind he heard an indignant,
What?
Before she could say another word, Makwa put a fingertip over her lips. She went still as her eyes took a slow survey of her surroundings while her ears panned the area, and she emitted a soft, curious growl as though she were accepting a warning of nearby danger. He spoke as he seemed to gather the words from somewhere unknown, thinking at first,
I did understand your words, Shimna. It's good to see you too.
And then saying it as,
Maya de dot de sesin de speca, Shimna, kut de se tu weo.
Shimna stepped back with a shriek of delight that made a few people look on. She burst into a torrent of words, jumping up and down as she spoke.
I knew it.
Makwa tried to understand, but it was so much so fast that he jumbled it and held up his hands.
Shimna, oh great fish, what's the word?
Saruth reached out and gave the girl a gentle tap on the nose.
Shimna? Dispeka langu eft, Makwa.
Makwa understood it as him saying the girl should speak to him at a lesser pace. He gave Saruth a look of gratitude. Shimna tipped an ear and leaned over as she spoke to Saruth in a half-whisper.
Is he a slow learner that I must talk slow?
Makwa snorted at her and turned his back.
Saruth chuckled. No, your language takes some getting used to. Given time, he'll understand better, even if that understanding is not yet. Go slowly. And give him time to listen.
He laid his ears back while his tail lashed. The little menace didn't deserve his attention. Making her pay would be as easy as not talking to her. Saruth, however, she hugged him from behind.
Oh, Makwa, don't be mad at me. I just didn't understand. I will go slower until you're faster.
He growled and remained still for long enough to make his point, then relaxed and turned around to pick her up in a hug. She squealed and wriggled in his grip for a moment, then grabbed him by the ears and planted a lick between his eyes. He set her down on the spot and rubbed the contaminated part of his pelt.
Ew! I'm glad to understand you, even if you were as silly as I was at your age, you crazy girl.
She just shook her head and grinned at him. The final travelers arrived, paid Tuljapa, and took their places on wooden benches that were affixed to the odd rock-like surface behind the small covering. Tuljapa lit a fire in a larger raised bowl of metal next to the seats. He then lit four torches, each of which was placed into a small hole. Each hole was at one corner of the large red square that surrounded the benches. Once this was done, he said something for Makwa's talkie to translate.
We are about to depart. For those who do not know, remain still until you get the hang of the movement. It is much like a boat at sea, I'm told. Yell if you fall off, and I will stop. We will travel at night and rest when the sun rises until it sets each day. If anyone needs to use the privy, now is the time to go to the shore and take care of that. If not, we go now.
A moment later, he spoke in Makwa's Barumish mercantile.
We go soon. Once we move, do not fall off. Yell if you do. Sun down, we go. Sun up, we stop. If you need to pee, do now before we go.
Makwa lifted a brow and looked to Saruth.
Fascinating perspective, isn't it?
Saruth grinned and ruffled his ears. He tolerated it and looked down, reaching to pull out and hold his talkie in his hand and examine it.
Yeah. Will the talkie help me learn languages so I can understand them without it?
Saruth nodded.
Indeed it will. It is the quickest way to learn a language that I've ever experienced. The reason is that you keep getting the words coupled with the meaning. You understand what they mean, but you also hear what they say.
Makwa's nod was interrupted when the wooden bench lurched under him. Shimna giggled from behind him. His tail went puffy, and he gripped the wood below him as it happened again.
Whoa!
Saru's hand gripped his shoulder.
Steady.
He'd been in a quake once that had rattled buildings in Maruma City and broken plates in the bakery. At first, he thought this was another. It didn't take him long, however, to figure out that it wasn't. The world seemed to be lowering around him and his companions as the water drew back from the stone-like surface they were on, easily doubling its expanse. An animal emitted a low, rumbling sound that started below the range of his hearing, till Joppa stood still with his arms raised and began to chant. A large head rose from the swamp in front of him. Huge gills flapped as the animal took in a breath of air. Some of Toljapa's singing and humming was in his own language, but most of it was gibberish to Makwa's talkie. He sat with his mouth open in amazement as he watched the Tortanga begin to move forward. Large, squishy sounds in the swamp marked each footfall of the lumbering beast. Some travelers watched in awe, while others didn't seem to be that impressed. Makwa's eyes narrowed as he noticed that the ones who were not astonished were wearing crocado silks in the traditional way that Toljapa and Shimna wore them. The swamp land moved around them at a deceptive pace. While it seemed to be slow at first, Makwa noticed that it wasn't long before the movement through the colorful moonlight and trees made Optanoth vanish into the night. Crocados called out in the darkness about them, and Makwa's ears panned around as he listened to the sounds of the distant night. Saru stood, stretched, and turned to Makwa.
"You might want to move into the sleeping tent and get some rest. Tomorrow, during the stop, we can go fishing if you want."
He shook his head.
"Not yet, please. I'd like to stay up a little longer just to see what's happening."
Saruth nodded and moved off to talk to some of the other travelers, leaving Makwa to his own designs. As he looked around, he spotted several people who were just taking it all in. He saw an old lady who had reddish fur and large spectacles. She wore a black tunic and pantaloons and was accompanied by two younger men. As he looked on, Makwa blinked and realized that she was the same woman who had gotten him in trouble back at the inn. He laid his ears back. About that time, she saw him. She turned her head and lifted her chin as she said something that his talkie translated as,
"He bored riffraff, I see."
He was about to tell her that she could take a long walk down a short dock, but then remembered something that Saruth had told him. The words seemed to echo in his mind as he thought them.
"Some people are not worth arguing with, Makwa. Anyone can invite you to a war of words, but only you can agree to draw the lines of battle."
He turned away from her and went to the back of the Tortanga to sit and peer out into the swamp and up at the stars. His mind drifted. He wondered who his father was and why his mother never really talked about him other than to say he was a good man.
"Would he be proud of me?" he thought. "Makwa, you have the look of one thinking of home. Where is your heart now?"
He looked over and up at her. Shimna offered an impish smile. She handed him a few kupatha berries as her eyes held him in their inquiring depths. He hadn't even heard her speak in her language because of how deep in his thoughts he had been, but he had heard her meaning because somewhere in his mind he was pondering her, too. At first, he thought of telling the girl nothing. He didn't like her chatter most times, but this time, instead of being annoying, she just seemed caring.
I was thinking about my father. I was wondering what he would say if he could see me now and what he would think of me going with Saruth. I was also wondering if he'd be proud of me.
She looked at him and blinked, perking her ears. She held out a hand with a few more berries in it. He lifted a brow and nodded in thanks as he took the berries, looking past the girl at the night sky. Shimna was silent. He blinked, staring at her and easing an ear back.
Are my words wrong? No.
She turned and gazed up at the stars that he'd been looking at.
The words are right. I just didn't expect that. I thought of Saruth as your father. When I see you with him, he is that person to you.
It was Makwa's turn to blink as words failed him. His eyes wandered the heavens. The more he considered it, the more true it seemed to him. Saruth was something his father never had a chance to be, and something his mother never could be. Still, he looked nothing like the strange man with all his white fur and golden stripes and blue eyes. How was it possible that she thought they were related? Maybe she didn't look at the surface so much as the relationship? He guessed that was all that really mattered, wasn't it? It was almost as if... Shimna interrupted his thoughts.
He will make you a man, Maqua. This I see.
She paused.
You are chosen.
Maqua snorted and considered asking just how Saruth might do that and how she, a little girl, would be the one to see it. That might not be the best way to find out about such things. Still, he opened his mouth and almost asked, but then stopped as her final comment came down like lightning splitting the skies of his mind. Chosen? He was. He had been, clearly. An unsure sort of sensation rose in him. His ears warm as a sort of emotional uncertainty filled him. Gratitude warred with wonder, an odd embarrassment, and a true inability to understand such a choice. Why would Saruth do that? He was a street kid, a thief, and nothing more. Society had brooked little use for him or any like him, and yet here he was, fed, clothed, looked after. He lacked for nothing, and there was simply no reason he could point to as to why that was. He looked around, and then, because he didn't know what to say, he munched on one of the tasty berries. His thoughts turned to it and offered an escape from the subject. I wish I'd been able to understand you when you showed me about all those plants. She eased down to sit near him and crossed her legs.
I'll show you again on this trip.
Maqua nodded and glanced her way.
I'd like that, Shimna.
He noticed the sky becoming partly obscured, eyed the taller trees now passing by on either side, and scooched forward to look over the edge of the shell at the land in shallow water as they rolled by below them in the half-gloom.
How does Tiljapa make it move?
She giggled and leaned to whisper into his ear.
It is a secret. I don't even know myself, but it is a great Regentan secret. When I find out, I will tell you, though, Maqua, because I like you.
He grinned as he sat up and made a show of rubbing his ear after she whispered into it.
What do you do for fun?
Her eyes showed delight in the question, and she tipped back to lay out as she lifted her expressive hands. They danced as a visual aid to the activity she described.
Swimming, exploring, playing with animals, and watching them, poking my brother's tummy.
He considered her words and looked at the stars as she spoke. He didn't swim, and getting wet wasn't his favorite thing. He agreed on exploring. Animals were neat, but he'd get bored watching them for too long. People were much more interesting. If he had a brother, he'd like that too.
Maqua, are you listening?
He blinked and looked over at her.
Yes.
He watched her tail flick.
What's your favorite thing to do?
She sat up and curled her tail into her lap.
Do stuff with Dad.
Why? She licked her nose and gazed off into the night for a moment.
In Wazella, girls spend more time at home than in other places. I want to ride the Tortanga and be a sage like he is. Even though it is not forbidden, it is not something many girls do.
He flicked an ear.
I think you'd be good at it.
She grinned and reached to grab one of his ears, tugging to get him to lay out beside her as she lay back again. He made a small growling noise and laid back.
Shimna, what's your mother like?
Her grin grew bigger.
She is a healer and very good cook. Maybe come to her for advice on healing and cooking. I want to be a cook like her when I'm older, even if I do not want to be a healer.
She rubbed her hands together.
I can't wait to get home. When we get home, there will be happy hugs. After that, there will be kupatha pies and baked smack and zulak stew.
Maqua couldn't help but smile at her blissful expression as she licked her lips. The girl's words reminded him of his mother running the bakery back home and making him all sorts of goodies when they had the money to spare or it was a special time, such as New Spring. He licked his lips at the thought.
Mom made wonderful spice cake for me on the first spring day. Even if we didn't have much money, there was always spice cake when the winter faded.
Shimna was quiet for a moment, and her tail wriggled like an uneasy worm unsure about crossing a hot rock. He knew it was coming, but it didn't make it any easier when she asked it.
Your mother is gone, isn't she?
He nodded and looked through a clearing in the trees to catch sight of the lavender and aqua hues of moonlight from the moon they called Morana. He had asked his mother what the name meant once, and she had told him that her grandfather had told her it translated from ancient Najin as beautiful eye.
Morana smiles tonight. Akwisin?
He pointed to the moon, explained it, and then looked behind him and noticed that the other conversations had died down a bit and most travelers had taken their places in the sleeping tent. Tiljapa sat with Saruth up front. Maqua stood and stretched out with a yawn, feeling as though his bones themselves were tired and refused to move anymore.
I'm going to bed.
Shimna nodded and went to sit with Saruth and her father. Makwa stumbled into the large, dome-shaped tent and pulled a separation flap down to make a private room to use the bucket. After he was done, he rolled it back up and went into the main tent again, found a bed mat and collapsed on it, closing his eyes. Sleep came within moments.
Dreams gripped Makwa. People swirled about him as vague, ghost-like shapes of blue smoke and darkness all around but for the stars in every direction. Their light seemed to echo in an eternity of milky points. The shapes of people drew together in slow, wispy movements and took form into people he knew. One by one they became clearer, as though fog was burned by the sun's kiss from a window glass he had been peering through to see them. There was his mother, her smile comforting as she leaned in close and whispered to him,
Fair journey, my son. Wisdom guides your path even as you choose your steps. The Creator draws a pathway for you. Behold!
She waved her hand, and mists swirled up from it, spreading out through the stars afar, curving and forming an ethereal highway in the heavens. The road of mist went on beyond to a distant point of light that was brighter than the rest. Makwa's breath swirled in the chilled air, and as it cleared, another person took focus in his view. This was a man, and while Makwa was sure he knew him, he wasn't sure where from or how. A deep voice spoke, and the mist swirled from the mouth of the phantom.
A choice that is great soon comes.
The man had markings like him, and powerful, soulful eyes that held purpose within their depths. He reached out to touch Makwa with a warm hand to his face. Sudden questions grew within Makwa, and he tried to ask them when he realized that he was seeing his father, but he was unable to speak. The man's eyes closed as he leaned in to whisper into Makwa's ear.
Your last few choices were well made. Your honesty makes me proud.
The words were those he craved like none other. His mother touched his other cheek, gathering his attention.
Makwa, don't ever forget why you're here. When time's ballad of sorrow plays, sing with all your heart. So hope's flame will not die in those who feel despair. The power of your good heart is your greatest weapon against the dark that comes.
The stars seemed to come alive around them. They got closer and moved past as though he was at the center of an hourglass, looking up, and they were the sand rushing down around him. Once past him, they fell away like rain behind as he was propelled down the path toward the distant light. The stars had voices now, and their singing was faint but growing. He tried to make out their words, but it was in a language that Makwa didn't understand at first. As he accelerated, the stars became beams of light on all sides as though he were being hurtled through the cosmos by Jehovah himself. The singing grew louder and louder around him as a crescendo of voices too numerous to count were all singing the same song that echoed like thunder in Makwa's head.
Hope lives, life breathes, wind through the trees. Faith grows, love knows no end in thee. Rain falls, God calls all that receive. As fire dies, no more cries. People breathe free.
Makwa.
In spite of the sheer volume of the song that thundered in Makwa's mind, he heard the whisper near him. He looked ahead into the light and saw his father's face, stern and powerful, frightening and good as their eyes met. The man's lips drew back, his eyes showing conviction as he spoke with fangs shown.
Now, my son, choose. Let your destiny be shaped by the one who made us all.
He was somehow aware of his mother hugging him, her nose pressed to his cheek as his father gave him the command. The light grew before him as the song grew in volume beyond the loudest roar of cannon fire he had ever heard, and he felt warmth as he was plunged into its dazzling midst.